And we welcome into studio now Bishop Alan McGaughian, Bishop of the Diocese of Raphoe. Thank you so much for joining us, Bishop. Thanks for calling in.
Nice to be here, Greg. Thank
you. How are you feeling?
That's a hard question to answer.
I thought I would start with the hard
one. I'm looking in both directions. These two big things, moving home and moving job, and I'm doing the two of them together. And I find it, frankly, more disorienting. I've moved many, many times in my life, and it is much more disorienting this time than it ever was before.
Do you think in the back of your mind you didn't think you'd be moved again, that this is where you would finish your...
It most certainly was. I am a Jesuit, and just part of the deal with being a Jesuit is that you're on the move and you expect to be moved, to be asked to move, and you move. But when I became a bishop, that was just a totally new thing, and there was a sense that I'm married to this now, and this is it. In my mind's eye, I had myself wondering, well, when I retire, where will I be? And I had myself at various places, always in County Donegal. I'm nearly embarrassed to say it, but I said it to the people last night, where would I be buried? I would be buried in Donegal. So absolutely, in the last while, when I spoke over in Belfast the day that it was announced that I was to be the bishop there, I spoke, and it's very true in terms of I am coming home. I was born and raised in North County Antrim, and that is my home. But I have a sense also here that I'm leaving home. This has been my home.
And I suppose either consciously or subconsciously, perhaps you allowed yourself, I don't know if it would be an emotional attachment to an area, do you know what I mean? As you say, you knew the life of a Jesuit priest particularly, so perhaps you always held a little back, but perhaps, as I say, either consciously or subconsciously, you allowed the roots to grow a little bit deeper here.
I think that is true. We Jesuits try to commit ourselves totally to wherever we are, but no, there was that element. I was pretty sure this is it. Mm-hmm. This is it for good. Yeah.
Well, one of the last times I spoke to you, somewhat ironically, I don't know if that's the right word, you had to lay out in really quite frank terms the reality of asking priests to move, from one diocese to another. That's what they signed up for. And even in the face of, public opposition, and I think in a way that's a beautiful thing, that someone means so much to some that they would gather and they would call on you to change your decision. But you says, you're really quite firm, this is a decision, it can't be changed. And then a couple of short months later, you find yourself in pretty much a similar position.
Yeah, I about a year ago, when Down and Connor was vacant, a number of people said to me, we think you might be going there. People whose opinion you would take very seriously. And I was open to that at that time. Then 6 months passed, 9 months passed, and I was clear in my mind, no, whatever that was, that's not on now. It was completely out of my mind. And it was a Saturday morning there about a month ago. I was sitting, I had done the park run. I was sitting at home relaxing. I was going to relax for the rest of the morning, and a text came asking me to contact the Papal Nuncio's office. And just that was, oh my goodness, here it is. And then it moved very quickly. And I was sitting in front of the Papal Nuncio, and just the way it works is, he says, the Holy Father has appointed you to be the Bishop of Down and Connor. We chatted back and forward just about that. But then the next line is, with that little interim, was, do you accept? So I looked at him and I sort of smiled. I said, what do you think? somebody who has spoken to you as I did on this other side, come on. Yes, it's so it. absolutely. There is. I committed myself to live under obedience, and when it comes.
Yeah. Would an interview like this been more difficult, sort of more immediately after that, whilst you were processing emotions?
Yes, I wouldn't have done it. And like even after after it was made public there on the 2nd of February, I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to speak publicly. I dealt with people one by one, and you know, like there was a whole lot of dealing with people one by one. Telling the people in my own office and in my own house that, oh goodness gracious. So I was not ready. Now, and when I was contacted by the station here to come, I said, wait a minute, no, I don't want it. I want it to be almost as I'm walking out the door, yeah. I'm prepared to do this, but not until then.
You know,
then.
Bishop, you don't get if you don't ask. So
absolutely. No, I understand that.
It's 6 years you've been the bishop, isn't that correct?
Yes.
And it has there's been a whole range of things, and I suppose really in terms of just coming here, some of the first inquiries you would have got, some of the first things you would have had to have dealt with were matters around abuse.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, so that as you walked in, that was some of the work that you had to begin immediately.
Absolutely, and that. In many ways, that is one of the big realities of my time as a bishop. It is maybe the big reality in the life of our church, this horrendous injustice to the most vulnerable and responsibility on the part of those who were guilty, and then responsibility on the part of the institution. And then I'm the bishop. I am the institution, and I carry that, and rightly so. So, of course, you know, that is something that, in my position, you carry with you all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, things that have been in place or efforts that have been made to try and deal with that, you would very much hope they continue, I presume.
And that. Indeed, not only that, and there are very good things in this diocese. I think particularly of what we have set up, the liaison person Margaret Northage, does a wonderful job in reaching out compassionately and caringly, and I know that will continue, and. One would hope that we, as a church, will get better at this.
Mm-hmm. Of course, too, in the middle of your 6 years there or thereabouts, too, we had something that very, very few people have ever experienced before, and that was COVID.
Yes. Wow.
Which for me seems like it never happened, and then at the same time, it feels like it went on forever, and it feels like it was yesterday. And it feels like it was 25 years ago. It's incredibly difficult for me personally to sort of frame it in life.
Oh, absolutely. And like in terms of my 6 years here, it was smack in the middle. And I had some plans. I had a pastoral plan in the making and moves. Like that one simple but really important for me part of my pastoral dream was... And I spoke about it and got a great response from musicians in every parish. I wanted congregational singing. I really wanted to encourage that. And we had a marvellous gathering on Pentecost Sunday 2019 where people came, hundreds of them came from all across the diocese. And we just had this wonderful liturgy with everybody singing their hearts out. Yeah. And the idea was that we'd go back and we would nurture this in every parish. And bang, not only, first of all, we can't be in church for weeks and months on end, and then we're let back into church and what? We can't sing. So we just this big bang, smack in the middle. And that's just one image of how it just shut everything down. And that was a major part of of my experience as a bishop, wanting to do something and then just kind of everything's frozen, everything's mm-hmm. on ice now for her.
And it was a difficult time too, in that it seemed to that an awful lot was happening, but things were very slow to lift for the church, and you know, in terms of singing or whatever it might be, and the terrible impact it had on people too in the grieving process. And there's some study out today which points to that you know, there are still people that, because of the system, this process that we'd established that helps us through a process that transitions us from a person being there one day and then not being there, and how we deal with that was taken from us. Now, we did find other ways, but it's still there are still people now. I think that the process for them has been stunted because of what we were asked to do or what we were restricted from doing.
I don't doubt that. I know, one of the first big impressions when I actually came to live in Donegal was I realised that all of those rituals around bereavement and supporting the bereaved in terms of wakes, like they are developed to a degree in Donegal like nowhere else in Ireland. Nowhere else in Ireland is there the same sense of the duty of solidarity and gathering around people. And so, my goodness, like the idea that people couldn't gather for wakes or that nobody could be in church. And it, my God, when you think of it, the horrible shock to the system of people who were bereaved, that they were standing outside the church and their mother or father or close relative was being, you know, prayed for inside, and people standing, keeping distant from one another outside. It was horrendous.
Yeah, and I remember speaking to people, and we'll move on from it because I think a lot of people want to vote, remain focused on that. But just remember speaking to older people that were sort of saying to me, like, listen, I'll take my chances. Just let me into the church to pray. If God protects me, he protects me. If he doesn't, he doesn't. And it was such a tough time. But during those times, there was some evolution as well. You know, Mass became incredibly popular on social media. Yeah. You led a rosary yourself, which proved quite a thing.
It did. That on Tubber Dhone that we started on, it was St. Patrick's Night that year. It was Father Paddy Dunn said to me, you know, you have to reach out to the people. You're the bishop. Get into the cathedral and use the webcam and lead them in the rosary. I said I would do that, but also that I would lead them in the examen, which is this review of the day prayer. And, oh my goodness, like for months on end, I had this experience of going over to the cathedral and knowing, first of all, on Facebook, you could see that there were lots of people mm-hmm. from around the diocese, around the world. And then there was this other hidden, it has only become clear to me, there were these hundreds, maybe a few thousand on webcam who weren't, like, you don't know about them. They're just sitting out there. And I have been met again and again by people all across this diocese, but all across the country, saying that it was a real anchor in the day, and particularly people living alone, they felt bound into a community. It was a real lesson to us, you know. Like community is something that you do shoulder to shoulder, you know, touching one another, looking at one another in the eye. But there was real community.
Yeah,
there was a real experience of community that could be supported by the social media. That was amazing.
And too, you know, I just think there were lessons to be learned, and I wondered, did we learn them in that, you know, you would be very familiar, most people would, but we certainly would on this programme, about, you know, rural isolation or loneliness and what have you. And we all, I think everyone got a sense of that. And I kind of hoped that we would learn coming through that maybe, you know, we would ensure that people aren't lonely or don't feel isolated. I don't know if that happened or not. I don't know if we did learn from that and things have changed, or everyone went back to the hustle and bustle of life and those who felt lonely already continued to do so. I don't know.
Listen, to some extent, the latter is the case. But there's also the reality that the numbers of older people who became very adept at iPads and iPhones whoever heard of Zoom? But like, I'm Zooming both for work and for socialising day and daily. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who would never have dreamt that they could master this stuff is second nature to them. So I think to some extent, some of that isolation is being broken down.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, stay with me, Bishop, if you don't mind. We do have to take a short break. We'll be back with more from Bishop Alan McGaughian in about 2.5 minutes. Keep your texts coming in. Lots of people, a couple of questions, but a lot of people wishing to pass on their good wishes. Patricia on Facebook, God bless. Evelyn, Corinne, God bless Bishop Alan. Especially before I take the break, I'll talk about this and then we'll take the break and come back. My understanding is that you've been, and I think you referenced it today, but you also referenced it last night and previously, that you've been particularly moved by the amount of people praying for you. How has that surprised you in any way, or why is that moving you such?
Even last night and over the last while, there are individuals that I don't know awfully well who say to me, I pray for you every day. Why? Just that moves me very much. Like I sense that sort of Alan McGaughian doesn't deserve this. I'm surprised. I'm taken aback and very uplifted by it. You know, like very often people say, I'll pray for you, or you'll pray for me. And you know, the sceptic in us all says, well, what difference is this making, you know? But now I am a believer, and I believe it makes a difference. And I think, my goodness, this has to be giving me something that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
And we are in the company of Bishop Alan McGaughian, who, after over 6 years in this area, is moving to his new post as Bishop of Down and Connor. The messages coming in, and it was something that was at the forefront of my mind to mention to you, and that was the Chrysler tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
In moments of crisis, and this was felt unmatched in generations in this area, we see the absolute awfulness of life and death, and then we see also too the best of it in terms of supports and coming together and what have you. What's your recollection of that awful?
That afternoon, Father John Joe Duffy called me to say he had just heard reports. He was away down in the south of the county, and he thought it was something terrible. He even mentioned fatalities. And I was going into a meeting, and my thought was, that has to be an exaggeration. I put it out of my mind and went about the meeting. Then after the meeting in the office, they were saying that there's something on Highland Radio, actually, on your web page, and I drove down just as it was getting dark and arrived at the police cordon, and my first thought was, oh, maybe I shouldn't go in there, I'd only be getting in the way, but anyway, thank God I did, and the guard waved me on in. And just immediately, there was a local woman recognised me. Said, "Oh, Bishop, it's great you came." Just funny, just you had that experience that all of us have had at different stages of our lives. You're standing shoulder to shoulder with people going through just the most awful tragedy of their whole lives. There are no words, and yet somehow or other, you know that they're glad you're there. There's nothing you can say. But that really was how it was. My abiding memory of it is a sense of being honoured by the people who were suffering so much, who you know, like as a bishop, I am meant to be a pastor, a shepherd, and you often don't feel like that, and you feel totally inadequate to it. And then people in that awful moment allow you to be to be a shepherd to them. So my goodness, it was
And often too, like I stopped sort of asking the question is what can you say, you know, be it a bishop or a priest when you're there around people at the worst time in their lives. And the answer often was is you don't really, there's nothing to say, you don't have to say anything. And then I learned not really to reference that, because obviously me, just as someone who wouldn't have understood it, I would be saying, well, what can... Well, sometimes you actually don't say anything, you just be present, you just be there. And that's what happened, be it yourself or just the community on that day and the days that followed. Mm. Sometimes you don't have to say anything, you just have to be there.
No, that's right. And I think what an awful lot of people said to me was how glad they were that... They were that I was there standing beside Father John Joe. You know, like obviously we know Father John Joe, just in God's providence, was able to be with people, to find words in his homilies at the funeral masses and in other ways. And an awful lot of people who benefited from that then said, and you as his bishop were standing beside him, and that meant an awful lot to us. So, you know, like it was just standing there said something. You wanted it to say something. You don't know what exactly it's saying. Then, listen, I had the privilege of lead the people gathered for prayer in the church every night, and I had the privilege of leading that. And like what you're doing there is you are pointing to something beyond. It's not a, well, here's the answer
you don't have all the answers, because I think maybe there could be this perception that we struggle at times with, what, you know, how could God or how could a God do this? But you even as a bishop, you know, and a priest, and I've spoke to them in the past, sometimes you have to answer those questions yourself and find the answers through your prayer or through your faith. But you know, you're a critical thinker, and sometimes you go and say, "Well, why would this happen? Well, what is the purpose of this?"
And of yourself, you do not have an answer. Like you can't, you know, like it's not like something that you can say either to yourself or to somebody else, and they're convinced. They say, "Oh, yes, of course. Why did I not see that? Of course, it's not like that." But we, as Christians, have to speak to a reality that is not seen, that we don't see, that you don't get with your intellect, but that faith tells us about. And this is not an abdication of critical thinking. It's a stepping into another world that at various times in our lives we are able to affirm. In the moment of the greatest crisis, probably not. Mm-hmm. I do remember, actually, it was that other awful tragedy that happened while I was here was the four young men. Do you remember who died in the car crash? And I was reminded of something that I found the words to say that spoke was. I remember saying at one of the removals to the people that I expect that you may not be able to pray at this time, and don't be surprised at that, and don't be worried about it. We will pray for you, and as human beings, we are very limited. We never have all the answers in our moments of crisis. We have maybe no answers, and we feel totally lost. but we're part of something bigger. And there are others there with us. When I'm down, you're up. When, you know, and that's part of it. And that's staying within the ambit of just ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then we have faith that there's a spiritual reality that's bigger and beyond us entirely. And we reach out into that.
I mean, obviously, you formed some really strong friendships here. One of my highlights was the two bishops calling calling into studio, because I think you both worked very very well together. Is that sort of that friendship, that cooperation, unusual? Is it unusual, or is it something that you've managed to achieve yourselves? Or?
Well, I mean, as you saw, Bishop Andrew and I, we get on very naturally, and we don't see each other that often, but there just has come a bond. He and I wanted, and he contacted me at the time of you know, when the mica crisis. Yeah. It's funny, we're just naming it. One after the other. He wanted to come, and that we would be there together, and we went. And stood outside some of the houses, you know, falling apart, and we had the experience of the bricks crumbling in our hands. We wanted to do that together, and it was really effective that we did. So, is it now? There's an element of personal chemistry between me and him, but I and we Catholic clergy and the Church of Ireland and the Presbyterian clergy here in Letterkenny get on really well. Mm-hmm. And now, like, before my time, obviously, my goodness, you know, like when I was a child, I remember going up to the door of a Protestant church and looking in and realizing, my goodness, I would never go in there. You know, God, listen, it was another time, and that's how it was, and thank God it's gone.
Do you have to some extent forego connections to this area, if you know what I mean, to fully commit to your new post as Bishop of Down and Connor? I mean, you can't, or maybe you can, this is a question, not a statement, but do you have to emotionally move on as well? I'm not saying do you have to, you know, block people on Facebook, metaphorically speaking, right?
Yes, I know.
But do you sort of have to say, right, you know, to some extent, I kind of have to start afresh in my new post?
Oh, listen, I wish you wouldn't ask me that, you know. But in a certain sense, yeah, I wouldn't. Like, I have to give my... I'm the Bishop of Down.
I'm asking you this because I know actually sometimes priests have to.
They do. And
so that's like only fair to ask.
Oh, absolutely. No, like, back to your very first question about, you know, how is it right now? Like, last night I was there in the cathedral with hundreds of people from Rafu and just feeling such a bond with them. It was amazing. Now, if I'm to be a good Bishop of Down and Connor someday in the not too distant future, please God, I will have that bond with them, and like, wouldn't that be great? Please God, I will, where they are my life, and you know, I wear this ring on my finger that I never dreamt I was going to wear a ring on my ring finger, and it represents my desire to be united closely with my people, and starting like officially and formally on the 19th of March and then the 14th of April, the people of Down and Connor are going to be my people.
Yes, I am. And then, of course, you know, you struck a work-life balance here, if I can call
yes.
You know, which often isn't factored in as well. Because you have to have your downtime as well. Downtime, you're going to have plenty of downtime and Connor time for that matter.
Yeah, so here.
A caller says, does the bishop leave knowing that the door of the church in relation to abuse to date is fully opened and addressed?
No, you know, I think it is such a... I mean, this is a cataclysmic thing in our history, and goodness, I couldn't say yes. It's everything is sorted now. No, I cannot say that. But please God, just with the passage of time, it will be that people who have not been able to come forward will come forward. Things will be addressed.
But the church has to be seen in a way that someone can come forward.
Absolutely,
and
yes.
But you believe the church is in that position? Could more be done? Oh, more could always be done.
Exactly. More, yeah.
Those questions are they shouldn't be asked. Of course, more could be done, but it's a case of it has to be done.
Yes, okay. Yes.
What is the situation in terms of your replacement? I mean, we're getting loads of suggestions. I think you can guess.
No.
I'm not sure it's quite like that. What is the process there? How long might it take, and what happens in the interim?
Well, first of all, what happens in the interim? When I am either the bishop or the apostolic administrator of Rafoe until I am formally the bishop of Down and Connor. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, there's a group of consultors, priests of the diocese, whom I appointed as consultors, my consultors. They meet and they choose a priest of the diocese to be the administrator. He will have much of the authority. He will not be a bishop, mm-hmm. but he will have much of the authority of a bishop to keep the thing going. So that's what will happen in the interim. There will be a diocesan administrator appointed. The process is run by the Apostolic Nuncio. He will be writing out to many people, priests and lay people, who know something of the diocese. He will write to bishops and ask for suggestions about who would make a good bishop. And he will gather a big list of names. And then I think start whittling that down by asking more specifically for people's judgment before God about the suitability of this or that this or that priest to be the bishop and to be specifically the bishop of this diocese. It ends up where there is a list of three names with a dossier that is sent to Rome. There is a congregation known as the Congregation of Bishops that deal with those, and the after discussion at that level, the prefect of that, it's called a dicastery now, but the dicastery for bishops, goes to the Holy Father and presents this list of three names to him, and he does decide. There are hundreds of these every year, but I have reason to believe that the Pope very actively has a say. He examines these things closely. He asks some questions, and now he could say, I don't want any of those three. Mm-hmm. Go away and start again.
Oh, okay. So it's a long process.
It is.
You said earlier on that the question was put to you, you know, will you be, or do you want to be, or however it was phrased, the Bishop Down and Connor. Could you have declined that?
You could. Oh, yeah, the question, do you accept? I mean, there's two answers to that.
So, do you see that as a test that was given to you?
Well,
you're making a decision which is going to cause, obviously, perhaps great opportunity, but also great personal suffering.
Yes.
Which you brought, to some extent, it was put on you, but you also brought it to yourself. In other words, was this a test?
That question. A test is putting maybe too much in.
I'm not about the spiritual test, not a test by the church.
No, but it's but like a man could well say, listen, for reasons that you obviously do not understand, I'm not suitable for this.
Mm-hmm.
At this moment in my life, for reasons known only to me and that are in my soul, in my heart, I know I'm not the person that should do this? And my answer is no. And that has to be respected. Now, I know that if it happens, the papal nuncio, he will be very crestfallen because he's going to have to go back and start this whole thing all over again.
I have hundreds of messages which we'll read out and maybe get to you at some point. Wishing Bishop Allen all the best. I watched as a young boy step forward to speak to Bishop Allen last night after Mass while you were walking around the side of the cathedral. That's the hearts you've touched. It was lovely to see that young boy going to speak to you, which I think is particularly nice. That's, well, that one jumped out at me. And, of course, there was a poem written about you in The Story of Your Life. We've spoken in the past about, you know, you becoming a priest and what have you. I suppose I wanted to focus on, you know, just over 6 years ago onwards. That's all the time we have, Bishop McGuckian, but unanimously people are sending in love, good wishes and compliments to you. I suppose just I'll leave the last word to you.
Well, it has been the great privilege of my life. It's been a very challenging privilege, but nonetheless the great privilege of my life. I have come to love Donegal and the people of Donegal. I leave happy but sad at the same time. So I want to say thank you to you, Greg. I have been here. You have spoken and questioned me honestly and fairly, and I really appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, Bishop. I do appreciate it. We wish you all the best, good luck, best, I don't know the right phraseology, but anyway, we just wish you the very best with your move to the Bishop of Down, to be Bishop of Down and Connor, and there's no doubt, I think, that our area's loss is Down and Connor's gain.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time today as
well. My pleasure. God bless you.